Yes, I can.
Okay, let me just introduce you. Thanks, Juliet. We're having problems with the connection. Lagos.
Yeah, maybe, listen, why don't we reschedule this to another day?
Sorry. Don't worry, we're on air. It's fine. We're on air now. Mm. Okay. So let me just, I think you have a call coming in. Lagos, welcome to Borderline. You've already heard my guest. Okay. Today we're talking about UNRWA. 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 My guest is Juliet Tuma. She's the Director of Communications for United Nations Relief and Work Agency, commonly called UNRWA. Juliet, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Not at all. It's our pleasure because, of course, this is a crazy, crazy busy time for you. So every moment you give us is absolutely precious. Now, I wanted to start our conversation off with a recording by Chris Guinness. It was an interview with Chris Guinness that I'm hoping you'll be able to hear it. So let me play it and I'll know if you can hear it.
I think it is wholly disproportionate, and I think it's punitive. It will punish, like many financial sanctions do, the poorest and the most disadvantaged. There are 1 million people tonight, women, children, the elderly, the wounded, the sick, babies, the dying. They're the ones who urgently need UNRWA's humanitarian assistance tonight. What has Rishi Sunak and his government done? They've cut aid to those people. At a time when he says he wants regional stability, UNRWA in the past has been praised for, through its human development work, bringing stability around the region. This is a bit like suspending funding to the NHS because Lucy Letby killed some babies.
Joy, if you heard that, did you hear that, Juliet?
Yes, I did.
Excellent. I did. So that was the That was the voice of Chris Guinness, who was the former spokesperson for UNRWA, and he was in an interview with one of the UK channels. And prior to that, you know, he had talked about UNRWA and the importance work that UNRWA does. Most people do not know what UNRWA does. So I'm going to hand over to you to just give us a brief about UNRWA and the history of UNRWA, and we'll take it from there.
Yes, thanks so much for having me. Indeed, these are very critical times to the agency, and the situation right now is as such that we are not able to continue our humanitarian assistance in Gaza or other parts of the region beyond February because of the funding cuts that we've been undergoing from donors. Now, onto what UNRWA does, we provide education to more than 500,000 children around the region. We give primary health care to 2 million people. We give cash assistance to poor families. And also in emergencies and in times of conflict and wars, like we're having right now in Gaza, UNRWA takes a lead role. So in Gaza, there's now 2 million people who rely on the agency's work as their only lifeline. They live, for example, in UNRWA shelters. They rely on UNRWA food assistance. They rely on water coming from UNRWA. The fuel that comes into Gaza for humanitarian purposes is bought and distributed to medical facilities, hospitals, and UN shelters by UNRWA. So it is a lifeline that is sadly going to be cut if funding does not resume. And as we know, famine is around the corner, and there are many people who are hungry and in some cases starving.
UNRWA was founded in 1949. Is that correct? 1949.
That's right. We're almost 75 years old.
Exactly. Yes. And UNRWA works. When people started hearing about UNRWA, they think, oh, just Palestine, just Gaza, just Gaza. UNRWA has some, 30,000 staff. You work in Syria, Lebanon, everywhere that you have Palestinian refugees. Tell us why exactly it was funded. What triggered the founding of UNRWA itself?
So, yes, 30,000 people work for UNRWA. The largest operation for us has historically been in Gaza. Now it's even more important and more critical because of the war. But we also work in the West Bank, including East Jerusalem. We work in Jordan, we work in Syria, and we work in Lebanon. So wherever there are Palestine refugees, UNRWA is there to serve them. It was established in 1949 following the Arab-Israeli conflict and following the influx of what was back then around 500,000 Palestine refugees who were forced to flee their homes and took refuge in these five areas of operation. So UNRWA was established to help that particular group of people. And also 75 years on, given the fact that there is no political solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, UNRWA continues to serve these Palestine refugees. We have now around 6 million who are registered. Not all of them are recipients of assistance, I would like to stress, or services. But it is a critical service provider to many refugees. And until there is a solution to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, UNRWA is going to continue to undertake its mandate, which is the delivery of humanitarian assistance and development assistance to Palestine refugees.
Some people sometimes get UNRWA mixed up with UNHCR, which is the United Nations High Commission for Refugees. How does UNRWA differ to UNHCR?
We are the UN Palestine Refugee Agency. It's a special agency that was set up and established before UNHCR, in fact, to take care of the Palestinian people who were uprooted from their homes during the 1948 war and to provide them with services. Now, UNRWA does not do resettlement of these refugees. That's one big difference. And for us, the mandate is in accordance with the General Assembly resolution that says that until a resolution is found to, a fair solution is found to the Palestinians, to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, UNRWA should continue to stay there and provide services to Palestine refugees wherever they are in the region.
Excellent. Because one of the services, critical services, that you do provide is education. Several people, doctors, they've talked about attending UNRWA schools. Tell us about the UNRWA schools and the importance of that, especially when one looks at the literacy rate in Gaza. Is some 93%, which is really, I know, I can see you smiling, very impressive. Tell us about UNRWA schools and the quality of education, but most importantly, the importance of that school to, you know, a group of people that are basically subjugated and under colonialism.
UNRWA is the only UN agency in the world that runs schools. There's no other UN agency in the world that has a fully fledged school system. So we have more than 700 schools around the region. The vast majority of those schools are in Gaza because the largest program that we have is Gaza. And the largest education, the largest program that the agency runs around the region is in fact education. So for example, the highest number of our staff are teachers and educators. And it has been known over the history of since its establishment, this program and these schools have been known for the excellence and for the high quality of education that our teachers, the UNRWA teachers, provided to millions of children who went through our schools. And indeed, you have very many success stories around the world, not just in the region. You have doctors, you have engineers, you have someone working for NASA, for example, who went
wow.
to an UNRWA school. Yes. Yeah. So the education has been our pride and joy over the past many years. And it has been noted that the quality of the education in UNRWA schools is known and has been vouched for by a number of international organizations, including other UN entities, but also the British Council and the World Bank.
In December 2003, the International Labour Organization and the Palestinian Statistics Bureau determined that at least 66% of employment was lost in Gaza since the recent war broke out. And of course, many of your colleagues have been killed. So let's come back to today. We'll bring it to today.
Yeah.
Many refugees are taking, you know, when I say refugees, I mean, they're like refugees two or three times over now, really, let's be honest. Since this war began, they've taken solace and you know, refuge in UNRWA schools, etc., etc. And then all of a sudden, South Africa takes Israel to court. The ICJ, much as it didn't rule on genocide, but it did confirm and affirm that Israel was on its way to committing genocide. Although it didn't say stop the, you know, ceasefire, it did say Israel must allow humanitarian aid. So fundamentally, the ruling was against Israel, let's be honest. And then out of the blue, we get this accusation from Israel. How, when UNRWA employs its staff, is Israel aware of the staff that UNRWA employs?
Yes, because every year what UNRWA does is it shares a list of all its staff working for the agency, for UNRWA, with host governments across the region. So we do that in Syria, in Lebanon, in Jordan, with the Palestinian Authority. In the context of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, UNRWA also shares a list of its staff working in these two areas with the government of Israel as the occupying power. The last time that UNRWA shared that list of staff with...
Oops. Oh, we seem to have
the government.
We lost you for a second.
And what happens?
Go ahead.
And what happens is that we have never received from the State of Israel. We have never received a response, let alone an objection to the content of those lists.
Hello, can you hear me? I thought it had frozen.
Yes, I can.
So what the last thing you said is Israel has never actually opposed. So you basically send them for what we call clearance. You send the list to them for Israel to clear it as you would to any host countries, correct?
Yeah, but we never received a response from the government of Israel on the content of those lists.
Right. So at what point or when exactly did Israel inform UNRWA of these allegations against, I believe, 12 UNRWA members of being involved with 710?
Yes, that was on the 18th of January during a meeting where we were notified verbally with these what we consider in the agency as very, very serious allegations.
Immediately, those members of staff have been sacked from, or at least suspended, or are they sacked?
Yes, that's right. Two of the 12 are dead, and the other 10 staff members were notified in writing that their contracts have been terminated with the agency.
May I ask why? Because I'm at work now. If an allegation is made against me, at the very serious, I would be suspended till further investigation. Why did UNRWA feel it important to terminate the contract of the 10 staff immediately?
So the Commissioner General of the agency, the Commissioner General of UNRWA, has the right to terminate the contracts of staff if it's done in the best interest of the agency. And he did that due to the huge risk that such serious allegations have on the risk, on the reputational risk to the agency, and also the risk to what has become the largest humanitarian operation that the agency is running right now, one of the largest in the world. So not to risk that.
Mm. One of the biggest funders is, of course, I think the number one funder is United States. Then you have Germany. Then you have the EU. You have Sweden, etc., etc. Norway, who actually does fund UNRWA actively, seems to be the only one that's actually standing up for UNRWA, if one would say common sense, saying, look, let's calm down. We can't withdraw this. What does UNRWA have to say for the countries that are withdrawing their funding to UNRWA?
Yes, so far 16 countries have suspended their funding to the agency, even though there is an active war happening in Gaza, and despite the role that the agency plays in the response to the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, including some of our largest donors and the largest donor as well. And what we say to these countries is, please reconsider this decision because of everything that's happening in Gaza and because of the repercussions that this pose in funding is going to have, not only on people in Gaza, but also on people around the region. Because if we do not get the funding by the end of February, in the beginning of March, the agency is likely to close down, as one example, all its schools for 250,000 kids, not in Gaza, but in Jordan, in Lebanon, in Syria, in the West Bank. So 250,000 kids are going to be on the streets in a place, in a region that's already in a lot of turmoil and that already has quite a lot of instability. So that's just one example.
Philip, the UNRWA chief, Philip Lazzarini, said, and I quote, the steps to suspend funding is additional collective punishment for Palestinians. Would you agree with that?
Yes, because it comes at a time when people are going through collective punishment, whether it's the forced displacement, whether everything that's happening in Gaza due to the war. They are being caught in the middle. They are paying a very heavy price for something that's not of their making.
Indeed. Now, what's the progress with humanitarian aid right now? Because one of the things, judgments that the ICJ gave was that Israel must allow humanitarian aid. But we see videos and reports of right-wing Israelis blocking aid from coming in. What's the status with aid right now?
So, even before the ICJ order and since the war has begun on the 7th of October, there's been quite a lot of restrictions on bringing in humanitarian assistance into Gaza. So if you recall, the first 2 weeks after the war started, there has been a total hermetic siege. So we were not able to bring in any humanitarian supplies at all. And then aid started trickling in, and we called it back then a drop in the ocean because it was far, far from enough. What we have right now is a slight improvement, but it's not at all at the level to match the overwhelming need. I was in Gaza myself just a couple of weeks ago. I mean, people are living not in tents. They're living under a plastic sheet, whole families are living out in the open, either by the sea or in any open area that they can find. They just set up these little structures covered with a plastic sheet, and that becomes their home in the middle of nowhere, with no facilities, with very little food, with almost no clean water. So the situation of people is absolutely catastrophic when it comes to Gaza. And so this is testament to the very little aid that has been allowed in. Now, a defunding to UNRWA will make the situation that is already very, very, very bad far, far worse.
Mm. Chris, I think it's Thomas White, another director of UNRWA affairs in Gaza and the UN Deputy Humanitarian Coordinator, said it's difficult to imagine that Gazans will survive this crisis without UNRWA. yesterday, aid, $53 billion of aid, was signed off by the EU to Ukraine, which will be given to them over 5 years to be reviewed over in 2 years' time. Why do you think Palestinians, especially desperate Palestinians, are being exceptionalized or collectively punished in this way?
Look, I'm not sure this is a question that can be answered by UNRWA. This is a question more to the donor countries. Now, what we do know is that the world that we're living in right now is a world that has an abundance of humanitarian crises, of needs, of overwhelming times that the world is going through, whether through people displaced or the number of refugees and people in need, poverty, global inflation, all of that. So the world is not in a good place right now. But there needs to be a reach to everyone in need, including those in Gaza.
Indeed. Israel, for a long time, has been criticizing the UN. Is this part an extension of that criticism, especially since Antonio Guterres said 7/10 did not happen in isolation? Israel has basically upped the ante with his criticism of the UN, and in actual fact has argued that the UN continues to perpetuate the refugee status of Palestinians. What do you have to say to that?
Look, what I'll say is that UNRWA is a humanitarian development organization, and all we're asking for is to be able to do our jobs and fulfill our mandate and to deliver humanitarian assistance to people in need. People depend on the United Nations, including and especially UNRWA in Gaza, for their sheer survival.
So how many trucks is getting into Gaza today as opposed to before?
Before the war, Gaza used to get 500 trucks every day. That also includes commercial supplies, it includes fuel, and also humanitarian supplies. We've never, since the war began, have come close to that number. So the highest number we've ever managed to get in...
Yeah, go ahead.
From a flu, so...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. So we've never managed to get to that level, to that 500.
Mm. So roughly
so much,
how
much
many?
More yeah. needs to come in. Yeah, I mean, it's on average 100, 120. Sometimes it's less, sometimes it's more.
Wow. And how is it distributed? What about women? Because we have to talk about women, because often in war, women suffer the most. And that's not to take away from other people with regards to sanitary, etc. Are they able to get any kind of, you know, sanitary towels, etc.? Just things that we, those of us here, would take for granted.
Yeah, so that's certainly been an issue. Women... women's hygiene, women's privacy has certainly been an issue. So there is a lack of, you're absolutely right, in sanitary napkins and towels, tampons, and also in the availability of toilets, of clean water for women.
Sorry. Lagos, you can send me a WhatsApp only, because obviously we had to start later because of the network issues we were having. Send any of your questions via WhatsApp on 0809-597-5805. We are live on Facebook and on YouTube, NigeriaInfo99.3. You can also send your messages on your questions on Twitter. We can't take any calls, unfortunately, because we don't have much time. Are we able to get Juliet back? Oh, we seem to have lost her. Okay, so let's see. Okay, I think I might be able to take your calls, actually, because the call has dropped off. We're having lots of problems. Okay, so you can call me. 0700 993 993 993. The female only line is 0201 465 7190. We were talking about UNRWA. UNRWA is the United Nations UN agency that actually... Okay, I'm coming to your calls. Hello?
Hello, good evening, Madam Ireti.
Good evening. What's your name and where are you calling from, please? I can hear you.
My name is Michael Oba. I'm calling from Agungi.
Okay, go ahead, Michael.
Yeah. Okay, so we know what the problem is. There is something you mentioned that... Is it any little wonder that immediately South Africa took them to court that this evidence of the United Nations staff came up?
Mm.
So I've always known that the world is not neutral.
Mm.
It's organized crime at the highest level.
Mm.
Question, what do we do? Is it a bipolar world that will solve the problem? Can China and Russia and the other BRIC countries start pulling their muzzle? I support what... South Africa did in taking them to court, because that is the right thing, like Martin Luther King Jr. said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been a Biafra, it could have been another nation in the whole world, but let the right things be done. So my question is, how do we organize, knowing who the real enemies are, and they have the muscle and political will to continue perpetrating what is going on? What do we do?
What would you, let me ask you, what do you think we should do?
Number one, I will support a bipolar world. And how does it concern Nigeria? We have made a request to join the BRIC countries. I don't think we are taking it serious. We fought tooth and nail. In fact, Nigeria is a shining light when it comes to liberation of the apartheid South Africa. I know the role our forefathers played.
Mm.
I was young then, just 52. So my issue is, can we take it serious? The president shouldn't just be going to France every day. What has happened in Burkina Faso, Niger?
We're doing that. We're talking ECOWAS later. We're talking ECOWAS. My next guest is going to be on ECOWAS.
That for me, that is the way to go. Let us start breaking the back of these Western countries that are putting us where we are.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What's your name? Where are you calling from, please?
You have Emmanuel on the line.
Go ahead, Emmanuel.
The last caller, you know, to some of the West, you know, I wanted to say, I think we should have led the fight, you know, talking about what South Africa did. No, and at this point, I'm beginning to look at perhaps some country withdrawing from the UN. You know, because the UN seems to be inactive and not being responsive and responsive enough, you know, to do some certain things. We can't have a UN that is huge to some countries, and then when some other countries are being oppressed, you know, the UN seems not to be able to do anything about it. And at the end of the day, all of them at the point, you know, we gather at the General Assembly, you know, giving speeches, you know, that have little or nothing, you know, to do about the existence of unfairness and humanity. That is a general issue of humanity, so to say.
So what you're saying is that, you know, is you're actually questioning the strength of the UN and the worth of staying in the UN, which a lot of people have questioned.
Yes.
Yeah.
So at this point, I'm looking towards the BRICS. You know, not in the terms of maybe because I'm angry or because I want somebody better than the other. You know, but because I want quality justice. You know, of which these so-called countries think they are more powerful than the other, begin to come to the reality that we are all humans. And equity, fairness, and justice should be on the table. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for that. Hello?
Good evening, Mrs. Obi.
Good evening. What's your name and where are you calling from, please?
Mrs. Oboli, calling from Ikorodu.
Go ahead, Mrs. Oboli.
Although your guest is no longer there, but I...
Yes, unfortunately, the line disconnected. She was joining us from...
I only wanted to ask if UNRWA, as it were, if they cater for both parties at war... That's
no, they don't. UNRWA, as she explained, is the humanitarian agency that was set up in 1949, okay, as a result of what happened with Israel in 1948, which was the Nakba, what we call 48 Nakba, which is the catastrophe that happened to Palestinians with them being expelled and displaced from their homes, from their land, and as a 700,000, over 700,000, as a result of which they became refugees in different countries and some in Gaza.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Hello?
Yeah, Chief Mr. Reti Bakare. Good
Chief
evening.
Mister, good evening. How are you?
Thank you. My long time no talk.
Indeed. How are you?
Fine, man. You know, I asked you the other day about is it NATO?
NATO.
Hey, NATO. Yes. And this UN.
Yes, the UN.
Guterres. Have you Guterres? They call that man.
Antonio Guterres.
Guterres. Well, are they?
Well, Antonio Guterres has actually been very, very active. Okay. In fact, when this began, Israel, I think the Israeli ambassador to the UN, demanded that he resign. But of course, needless to say, he was ignored. But yes, Antonio Guterres has been very, very active.
I watched him the way he speak the other day. But my pain now, how come America had to veto whatever decision they decide to take in that UN?
Well, you know, Big Brother America, as they call them, you have the UN Security Council, America, Russia, there's like four or five countries that have veto power. Veto power means they can overturn. Right? America used its veto power several times to stop the ceasefire. Rightly or wrongly. Pardon?
Where things are going wrong. Because of their veto power, they will turn it, right? They look the other way.
Well, put it this way. America's policy on Israel is actually with experts, they no longer call it a foreign policy. It's a domestic policy. America's policy on Israel is a domestic policy, almost like Israel is a state in America.
You see, at times I don't like their way. Like this money they donated to some African country, including Nigeria. I'm not comfortable with it.
Good question.
I'm telling
Thank
you.
Thank you. Thank you America. Very much. Good points. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oops. Sorry, you can call back. That went on a little. So, hello? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, I can hear you.
I can hear you
too.
Yeah,
my name is Wale. I'm calling from Magodo.
Go ahead, Wale.
Okay, yeah, you mentioned something that the Palestine were displaced in 1948.
Yes.
That's not true.
That is true.
There was the war between the Palestine, between the Arabs and...
That is true. Kindly do not argue with me. I will disconnect.
I'm not arguing with you.
No, but that is true. It is true.
No, I'm not arguing with you.
No, I will not let you. I will not let you feed a falsehood, an historical falsehood. It is true.
You are the one saying falsehood.
Hello? Okay. So let's be clear. Right? If it's a historical falsehood, I won't. That's just a fact. Hello? Hello.
Yo.
Hello. Good evening. What's your name and where are you calling from, please?
My name is Mr. James.
Mr. James, go ahead.
Yes, I'm calling from Ikeja.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes, I want to find out, are we discussing of UNRWA or we're discussing Israel and Palestinian conflict?
Okay,
you are missing it together.
No. Hello. Can you listen to me? UNRWA is part of the Israel Palestine conflict. UNRWA.
No.
UNRWA.
Hold on now. Hold on. Let me land. Hello?
I'm listening. I want you to land.
You see, ORA is an organization. Israel and Palestine is a conflict country. When you are discussing about organizations, they are not the same.
No, I'm afraid you're wrong. I'm going to have to... You are wrong. Okay. People, calm down. Let me get this. I can't discuss with you if you come from a premise of falsehood. UNRWA, as my guest just explained, UNRWA is the UN humanitarian agency that works with Palestinians who have been displaced in different countries, Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, across. So UNRWA is also very important within the context of this war. If you heard what the ICJ said last week, for example, they said that Israel must allow humanitarian aid into Gaza. Well, guess who do you think is doing that? UNRWA. Why do they need to tell Israel to allow humanitarian aid? Because of this war. So kindly, if you're going to call and you want to have a discussion, we only have a few minutes left. As we say, this is borderlines. This is not down for conversations. This is borderlines. Please come correct. And to the person that said they were not displaced in 1948, that is a falsehood. Over 700,000 Palestinians were displaced in 1948. Israel was created in 1948. Palestine was partitioned in 1947. Can we please? We've done a lot of shows on history on this show. A lot. So history is not about your opinion. It is about history. Ooh. Hello.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What's your name and where you're calling from, please?
My name is Joe.
Okay, go ahead, Joe.
So,
Joe, where were you calling from? Sorry, I didn't hear you.
I'm on the road.
Go ahead.
So, is there any other thing that could be discussed on this program?
Good question.
Other than Israel and Palestinian problems.
Good question. We're discussing ECOWAS. And Nigeria is part of ECOWAS. No, you just asked me. You just asked me a question, and I am answering it in 15 minutes. You know, I always have two guests on this show. ECOWAS is our subject, which is to do with Nigeria, which is to do with West Africa, which incidentally also has a lot to do with the fact that our president is the president of ECOWAS at the moment. So please, my guest is downstairs. At 5 o'clock, we will start that part of the show. All right?
Okay.
Thank you. Hello? Hello?
Yeah, hi. Good day, TC Oge. Okay.
Good afternoon. What's your name and where are you calling from, please?
My name is Sunday. Finally got you today.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. Thank you for getting through.
The question you are not asking your guests is that how come if you people want to stop the war, the Hamas, where are the Hamas? I tell they say they are the one in Gaza Strip. Why are they not coming out to defend the people now that Israel is bombarding them?
Well, my guest doesn't work for Hamas, unfortunately. My guest works for the UN.
Yes, somebody come to Nigeria, kill Nigerians, carry some Nigerians, and you expect Nigerians to fold hand and watch them?
No, not at all. Do you want to ask me a question?
Israeli hostages.
Okay, would you like me to answer your question?
Yeah, answer.
Okay. What you said is tell Hamas to release those hostages, correct?
That is first and foremost, because that is a slap on the nation that has army.
Right, okay. So, 27,000 plus Palestinians have been killed. I said killed. Okay? 65,000 plus have been injured. Countless numbers are under the rubble. It is estimated that some 100,000 plus Palestinians are either dead, missing, okay, or injured. Now, that's in Gaza. Bear with me. Hamas was the authority in Gaza. democratically elected, correct? Now, Israel said they've gone to war with Hamas, correct? Now, let's flip over to the West Bank. Hamas is not in charge in the West Bank. However, however, since 7/10, over 400 Palestinians who live in the West Bank have been killed. Several thousand have been kidnapped. When I say kidnapped, they've been arrested and kidnapped by Israel under what Israel calls an administrative detention. What's an administrative detention? It means you never get charged. It means you never go to court. It means your people don't know where you are. Okay? So I would just like you to have that. Now, permit me to finish. Permit me to finish. There's 135 or so Palestinian hostages remaining. In November, I think it was, there was a quiet, right? There was a ceasefire. And Israel,
I follow the news about Israel.
Right, so there was a ceasefire.
Now,
exactly.
The question I want to ask you is that,
go ahead.
Why will Israel go and be arresting people and putting them under administrative detention in the first place?
Why do you think they are? You answer.
They just tell me. People are sleeping in their houses quietly.
Actually, that is it. Fact. That is exactly what I'm saying. Quote me.
So they just go there and arrest
quote
them
me. If you've been following, go and read up on it and quote me. And you can call me.
No.
Not at all. Absolutely. Is a 10-year-old a terrorist? Is a 10-year-old a terrorist?
No.
You're not answering my question. Is a 10-year-old a terrorist? Answer my question now. I have interviewed Israelis. We've invited them. They haven't come.
We're only listening to one side.
We've invited more. If they won't come, we're not going to have an argument on this. Is there some? Do we have somebody there? Okay. What's the question? I think I have a question. If you're not going to listen, we're going to have a conversation. You ask a question, I can answer your question. But if you're not going to listen, there's no point. There's absolutely no point. So what are we doing here? Are we playing the voice note? Okay, we're going to play the voice note, what I started the show with, and then we're going to be closing. I'll read one message from WhatsApp, and then we'll close.
I think it is wholly disproportionate, and I think it's punitive. It will punish, like many financial sanctions do, the poorest and the most disadvantaged. There are 1 million people tonight, women, children, the elderly, the wounded, the sick, babies, the dying. They're the ones who urgently need UNRWA's humanitarian assistance tonight. What has Rishi Sunak and his government done? They've cut aid to those people at a time when he says he wants regional stability. UNRWA in the past has been praised for, through its human development work, bringing stability around the region. It's absolutely horrifying, and the Secretary General, Philippe Lazzarini, the Commissioner General, the UN from top to bottom has condemned the appalling attacks on the 7th. But to be clear, UNRWA implements a zero tolerance policy. If you look at the Commissioner General's statement, he said he's got rid of these people in the interest to protect the interests of the agency before there's even prima facie evidence of wrongdoing. That's how seriously this zero tolerance policy is implemented. It's a very serious allegation. UNRWA is doing an investigation. It will be clear, it will be transparent, it'll be independent. This is a bit like suspending funding to the NHS because Lucy Letby killed some babies.
Okay, you heard that. That was Chris Guinness speaking on one of the British TV stations. He was the former spokesperson for UNRWA. Have we got any more time for the show? I believe we haven't. No, we haven't got any more time for the show. It's a shame because my guest, the line had to cut off, and you could see she was coughing, etc., etc. I'm not going to be able to answer any more of your calls, much as I would love to. Now, my next guest, we're going to be talking ECOWAS. What is going on at ECOWAS? Three countries have left ECOWAS. What remains of ECOWAS? Is it now a skeleton? Is it still fit for purpose? What's the whole point of ECOWAS? Join me with my special guest after this break.